Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. I'm Steve Marks.
And I'm Wade Wegner.
Roger Doherty.
Excellent. In the house.
It's nothing more, just a name. And thanks for coming on the show. We're going to get to you in a minute.
Yeah.
Talk about
after all the important news items.
Oh, yeah, well, we've got a lot of good news today.
We do.
Yeah, very important
stuff. We do have
stuff.
A lot
so
of news.
Let's get the first news item.
I got the mouse. Right. I'm clicking it. This is our data centers are awesomeness in a box.
Oh, it just says awesomeness box.
It actually says awesomeness print box. I think that's a.
There we go. There's a print. Interesting.
There's some weird.
However, at any rate, so.
So, David Aiken, can you please fix the CSS on your blog? Because it's really messing up our show.
Anyway, it looks like he's got some nice videos that go into, you know, our data centers. Which, by the way, I was out in Dublin last week. Was it last week?
It was just last week.
And got to tour the Dublin data center. And I will say, our data centers are awesomeness in a box. It was a really cool data center.
I was also in Dublin. I slept instead.
Yeah, you slept in and missed
tour.
It. So.
But nice. But you can get some of the awesomeness of that by watching these videos, which is cool. Thanks to David.
Just amazing to see the size and scale of what these data centers are able to handle. It's amazing.
They're like dozens of servers.
Dozens.
It's amazing how big these things are.
All right. So take a look at that.
Moving right along, we had a bug. We fixed it. So the bug was in the storage library that went out with Windows Azure SDK 1.5. There was a bug where basically if the connection got closed in the middle of downloading a blob, you might get a partial
download
of the blob, which generally wasn't very good for
your
app.
Not a good thing.
It got fixed pretty quickly.
So basically just get the latest update to the SDK.
Yeah, if you just go back to the page, you don't have to uninstall anything, or if you just click and install again, it'll just update itself. And this also says the version number, so you can make sure you have the new one.
Yep.
If you didn't install SDK 1.5 right away, you might already have the new version because it was a pretty quick turnaround.
But take a look just to make sure.
Windows Azure Marketplace now available in 26 countries. Supporting 17 currencies.
Yeah, in fact, and now we know that it's supported or it's available in Ireland as well.
It's true.
The day we arrived, it was not available, but the day we left, it was available. So this happened while we were in Ireland.
We fixed it. We went to Ireland and they were like, why don't we have a marketplace? And we said, you know what?
Let's change that.
We
right
agree,
away.
And we just made it happen.
Awesome.
So that's very cool.
It is cool.
Last up. Look at this thing.
Well, so I think that what's interesting here, and you'll have to parse the article a little bit, but Ted Kummert at the SQL Pass conference.
Pass Summit.
Pass Summit announced that by the end of the year, we'll have a CTP version of Hadoop running in Windows Azure. So take a look at this. I'm sure Ted is saying a little bit more at the summit. I don't know. Is that stuff going to be available for viewing online?
Yeah, they're streaming the keynotes, and I would imagine they'll make them available as on demand as well.
So we'll try to get a link for that as well, so that you can actually watch the announcement. But it's worth. I think that's pretty exciting. It'll be neat to see. So, and also since it's kind of SQL Azure-ish, we figured this is a great transition over to the feature today, because we do have Roger in the house. And Roger
in the house.
He's a technical evangelist focused on SQL Azure and SQL Server. So it's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it. It's big week for SQL Server. You know, we announced the branding around the next release of SQL Server, which is going to be called SQL Server 2012.
Nice.
And
very exciting new branding. Reinvigorate the community.
We decided to stick with what we know there, shall we say. But we're now in a situation where we have a shared code base between our on-premise SQL Server and our SQL Azure implementation. As a matter of fact, a lot of the improvements that are coming in 2012 are already live in the Azure platform as of the August update that got rolled out. So we've got a new SQL Azure portal experience that went live, which is actually pretty nice. If you just want to go out and build a simple web application, create some tables, add some data to those tables, run some queries, it works the way you would expect it to. It's not an annoying, overly busy UI.
Yeah. Is there still a swirling block?
No swirling blocks.
Oh,
those are out.
That was my favorite
swirling
part.
Blocks gone.
Then I'm not using it. That was fun.
You know
like
what?
That.
Why don't we build our own portal and we'll put a swirling block
okay.
back in?
Yeah.
So we'll
yeah, you guys are missing the swirling block.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, actually, and I think a lot of the UI principles that you see light up in that new portal experience, you're going to start seeing more and more of that. And we're going to try to like really drive some consistency across the experience.
Good.
So
yeah.
Now, bottom line is you have a thin client authoring experience against SQL Azure for simple tables, views, stored
yeah.
procedures, that
That's
type
great.
Of thing.
Excellent.
And then the other stuff that went out with that August update that's probably worth mentioning, the support for sparse columns, which is one of the kind of really cool data types for kind of semi-structured data.
Yeah.
So if you have like a huge wide table with a lot of name value pairs in it, it's kind of, you know, SQL originally had like 1,000 column limitation. You can blow that out to 30,000 columns now.
Wow.
So if you do like a select star against the table.
30,001.
There you go. Ah, so, see, not enough for you.
Yeah, I was hoping this was going to solve my problem, but it just didn't.
Sorry, dude. We'll have to work on those limits.
Yeah.
But you might think like what happens when you do select star against a table
yeah.
with 30,000
yeah.
columns. Not really a wise thing. So all of those sparse columns get bundled up into something we call a column set. And that all of those sparse columns then come back as a single XML instance in the
right.
result set. So that's a little bit of a different behavior
yeah.
than maybe some people are used to. And then if you need the traditional result set, materialized the way that you would expect, you have to explicitly name the columns that you want in the result set.
Gotcha.
And that'll come back the way that you expect it to.
And that's part of the updates from August in SQL.
Right,
Azure
so that
well.
Stuff's live, the new portal's live, sparse columns hit, some new Denali wave improvements or SQL Server 2012 improvements are already live. Things like support for results paging. So you can basically use an offset fetch kind of syntax in a select statement that says, all right, run this query, start at row X, and give me X or Y number
nice.
Of rows,
nice.
Right? And it's a lot easier than the old way of doing it, which is, you know, projecting row numbers over result sets with common table expressions, which does, like, makes my brain
that.
Hurt even
yeah.
saying it, right? So that's a nice thing that's available. The other thing is for error handling in Transact SQL, not exactly a dream come true. We made a nice attempt at that in 2005 by having like try-catch blocks in T-SQL, but the problem was we had no throw.
Mm.
We had this thing called raise error that kind of like had a lot of weird behaviors, and the biggest problem with raise error is you couldn't re-throw an error. So we now have support for throw. That's coming in SQL Server 2012, but already available in production in SQL
nice.
Azure.
Excellent.
So that's just a kind of a taste of some of the new stuff that's coming.
The value of services, being able to
right.
quickly
we
get
out
there.
We get to ship those things.
So we're
quickly,
beta testing
yeah.
everything in SQL Azure. No, I'm just kidding.
Now, they ran this stuff through its paces, and we felt
good.
Like it was ready for prime
good.
Time. So
cool.
So yeah, it's a big week for SQL, and you know, SQL, as far as I'm concerned, SQL is SQL. And, you know, we have a nice form factor, platform as a service form factor with SQL Azure. You want to buy some bits and install them locally. We got this thing called SQL Server. It's all coming out of the same team.
Nice.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yep.
So what are you
going to
show us today? You've got some stuff all prepared.
Yeah. So we're trying to enable a new experience for database developers targeting the cloud. And, you know, I think pretty much every professional developer I've ever talked to would probably agree that developing Transact SQL scripts is not exactly a modern development experience.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get refactoring. You don't, you don't know if something's going to work until you run it, right? So we really want to get to the point where we have a much better set of tools and a much more modern developer experience for those database apps. So we're shipping some technology called SQL Server Developer Tools, codenamed Juno, that allow you to build ugly web applications like this one. No.
I've always wanted to build ugly web applications like this one.
This is my like standard sample ASP.NET app that I trot
yeah.
out to show, you know, functionality. So the idea of what I'm going to show you today is we're going to start with a simple ASP.NET SQL Server app running on-premise. That was developed using the new SQL Server Data Tools. We just rebranded and announced those names this week. SQL Server Data Tools is a Visual Studio-based IDE for building SQL Server and SQL Azure applications.
Cool.
And it makes it really easy to build applications that target your on-premise environment or the cloud. Okay. And so what we've got here is a crappy web application that I built in 10 minutes that allows you to do CRUD operations against...
Ooh, a Kinect bike.
Yeah, I'm going to run a... Do you want to see what a Kinect bike looks like?
Yes.
Yeah. Here's what a Kinect bike looks like. There's your Kinect bike. How do you like
nice,
that?
Nice. Right. Project Jelly Bean.
Project Jelly Bean in the AdventureWorks product catalog, right?
Does Clint come with the bike?
No,
or is he just
no. You just get the bike.
Okay.
But hey, that's amazing. We just did an insert, right? Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And I can do deletes.
I don't believe it.
It is. It's truly unbelievable. I don't believe it.
Truly the crappiest web application ever built. But another...
I've built way crappier. I don't want to hear that.
So the other thing that this app does is we have some embedded reporting in here.
Yes.
So I can go view my product catalog that's rendered out of a report server web service running on-premise. Okay? Okay. So the idea is, so let's take this whole thing, let's push it up to the Windows Azure platform using
Great.
SQL Azure Database. So I've got this thing deployed on-premise. It was built in my SQL Server Developer Tools, which introduces a new database project type, as if we didn't have too many projects already. But the good news is we're going to start kind of coalescing on this project type and kind of stay there. You
cool.
won't see 50 moving forward. And so when you install SQL Server Data Tools, you'll get that new project type and a bunch of new designers and a new development experience. So here's all the tables that are in my database. Each of them are individual code fragments, and I can check those into source control and manage them as part of my overall solution if
yep.
I like, right? So I've deployed this thing on-premise, and as part of SQL Server Data Tools, we have a new SQL Server Explorer. So if you're a developer and you don't want to drag 42 terabytes of SQL Server administration bits down to your machine, and you just want to do everything from within Visual Studio, we want to make that possible.
Nice.
So this SQL Server Explorer is connected up to my on-premise instance, and the evidence that I've deployed this thing is that I've got a DAC registered for my database. So a DAC is a data tier application component. It's sort of the DLL of databases, right? It defines the blessed schema for my database. I register that with SQL Server, and now I can start hydrating databases from it. Okay, and there's some other benefits that we'll talk about in a minute. So the evidence that this has been hydrated is that we've got a ProductsDB database under here as well. And this is what's being used in my on-premise deployment of this application. Now, we have a nice experience around the connected experience against both SQL Server and SQL Azure. So I can go in, I can browse my data, I can edit my data. We want to give the developer the capabilities to work in both the disconnected way to do their development as well as a connected way. Okay, so that's kind of a little bit of what my app looks like. I've gone and what are we going to do to deploy this thing to the cloud? So we're going to have some nice wizards to do this, but in the interim, we're going to use the data tier application framework, which is the thing that builds these DACs, and we're going to extract it from our on-premise instance of SQL Server. We're going to take all the table data out and store that side by side with my DAC, okay? And then we'll have a single unit of deployment called a backpack that includes both my schema and my data, okay?
So the DAC has the schema. We've also got data, all these together.
Right, so two file formats. Backpack. DAC is schema only.
Yep.
Backpack is schema plus data,
okay?
And it's basically a table-by-table copy of your data, okay? And so that will create a single file that I can deploy up to SQL Azure, which is what my script is doing now. It's connected up to SQL Azure, and it's actually deploying that backpack. It's hydrating the database, and it's going to go and load all of that table data up into Windows Azure. So we'll let that run.
So the script that you ran, though, that's the script that you wrote.
I wrote this. This is a two-line script. Right now, it's using a couple of CodePlex exes that use the new version of the Data Tier Application Framework.
Cool.
Eventually, all that stuff will be integrated into both Management Studio and SQL Server Developer Tools and PowerShell, for that matter.
Gotcha.
So you won't have to use these throwaway exes that I'm using in this particular script. But you can see it's loading the data up now.
So when it does this import table pending and success, that means that it's not only created the table or like based on the schema, but it's also taken the data from the backpack.
Taking the data out of the backpack, loaded it into the table. And this would be equivalent to like you manually going out there, bulk copying data out into a flat file and then bulk copying it into the other destination.
So is it using BCP then? Is that
No. Okay. Here's the cool thing about this. So the data tier application framework, they decided to kind of depart from the aged BCP technology, which is really kind of kludgy and hard to use. They serialize the data using JSON now.
Oh, okay.
And so they guarantee the fidelity of that data in the backpack and that it will not lose, you know, collations or lose numeric accuracy or that type of thing. All the kinds of things you had to worry about with flat files before, that stuff is just handled now by JSON, right?
That's awesome.
So you can see the backpack is here. Whoops. So that was what was extracted from my on-premise, SQL Server installation and pushed up into SQL Azure, right?
Nice.
So just for just the purposes of the demo, I deployed a couple things in advance. I deployed a Windows Azure web role that has the ugly web application that I built running in it, okay? The other thing that I deployed in advance is the report, but this time, the report is not deployed to an on-premise instance of reporting services. It's actually deployed up to SQL Azure reporting, which is SQL Server reporting services technology delivered as a service on the Windows Azure platform. Same report, same design, everything. Yep. I just pre-deployed it just to kind of make the demo go a little bit faster, right? If we go into database here, you'll see the last time I refreshed, my database hadn't been created. If I refresh up here now, we should see ProductsDB. Yep.
Great.
So my deployment succeeded, and I can go in and use the new management portal to go and browse that data. Sorry, guys, no cubes.
Yeah.
I'm still sad about it. In my head, though, I'm imagining this spinning around in
circles.
Well,
not yet. Not here. It was always on the once you logged in.
Oh, I'm still imagining this one spinning. It's you can't stop.
You know, you could sort of just project that onto the screen if you want.
You should just spin.
Spin in place. Yeah, I could do that.
So here's all the tables, and you know, this is kind of the new experience that we're enabling. And I can go into the design mode on these things, or I can go view data in them.
Cool.
I can edit data in them. I can run queries against them. It's really kind of what you need to get started without installing any development tools on your box. But I just wanted to kind of show what that
new UI is
like.
Yeah, I mean, in the past,
like,
I'd use SSMS and, you know, another tool to open. And
right.
Even though I really like that tool, this is nice because I'm on the portal all the time. I can just pop this open and anything I would do in SSMS, I think.
Yeah, it's a web app. It's a thin client, so I'm not, you know, crossing boundaries with a rich client anymore. It's all running up in the data center, all that good stuff, right?
And depending on where I'm at, too, I don't have to worry about ports being open and so forth.
Exactly
right?
Correct.
It's all just up in the
exactly
the
correct. Right. So no sooner have I deployed my database than what usually happens, it's time to make a change. And this is where things usually get ugly. And you have to start worrying about coding hand-reconciled transact SQL upgrade scripts to move your schema from one version to another. And this is, you know, the oldest problem in the book for SQL Server and databases in general. And we intend to solve this handily with the data tier application framework. Okay, so I'll show you kind of what that looks like. So first, let's make our change in our new fancy schmancy SQL Server developer tools or data tools development environment. I'm going to pop open a table here, and you'll see the new table designer. Graphical editing capability against tables up top. In the new database project system, you define all your columns and stuff and your keys, check constraints, and indexes as part of one kind of code fragment. Okay, you don't not separate code fragments for those things. I can edit things graphically, or I can edit in code. That's totally fine.
Cool.
I can change, you know, use whichever I want. We keep the two in sync, right?
Nice.
So let's do something incredibly naive. Let's say we want to get rid of a column. We want to deprecate a column from our database. So I'll just delete this column. And because SQL Server Data Tools allows you to develop declaratively over a model of the database, we understand all the object dependencies, right? And we can refactor across them as well. So once I delete that, I find that I've got an error saying, dude, you just deleted a column that's referenced by other objects. Not really a good idea, right? But, you know, I wouldn't know that if I was a naive developer. I'd just go delete my column and try to deploy some scripts, and stuff just starts blowing up on me, right? So let's go fix this. I'll double-click it, It opens up the view, and the offensive column there is, you know, shown in squiggles.
Delete that guy.
Get rid of that bad boy.
Offensive.
It's offensive to me. and my errors are gone, right? So I didn't even have to do a build. It's just like you were developing in C Sharp or
nice.
C++. You know, if you do something
right.
goofy, you just Visual Studio tells you, right?
I don't know. I never do anything wrong when I write my code.
All right, whatever,
perfect.
Man.
First
yeah.
time.
Whatever you say.
It's amazing.
I don't see what the point is of doing all these mistakes. Seems counterproductive to me.
Oh, wowsy. Yeah. So I, you know, could be really naive and just deploy this thing, but let's do a couple of other things first. First of all, I want, you know, there are behavioral differences between SQL Azure and SQL Server. For example, SQL Azure requires a clustered index mm-hmm. on all your tables so we can keep our replicas in sync,
yep.
right? So I can actually use platform targeting now, turn that on, and say, look, this database is going to target SQL Azure. If I'm doing something that's not kosher, please tell me,
yep.
right? So, you know, of course, in the world of demos, I'm not doing anything that's not kosher, so I have no warnings. But I would have found out right now
right.
if that was the case, right? So that's extremely helpful from a developer perspective. The other thing I'll do is, let's say I want to hand this new version of my schema off to a DBA. We'll want to version the DAC for this thing and say, hey, this is version.1, and it's got the deprecated column in it.
Remove the offensive column.
The offensive column has been removed. And, yeah, so if I rebuild this thing, and we go look at the output of that.
Now, when you rebuild, is it just creating the
it's building
DAC?
A DAC pack.
Okay, or the backpack? Or
the DAC pack.
The DAC pack, okay.
Just the schema piece.
Got it.
Which
okay.
is the single unit of deployment that logically represents the new
okay.
version of my database schema, right? Okay. So if I go and I look at the output of that, here's my new DAC pack.
Okay.
Right. This is what I can hand off to a DBA to go and upgrade my schema. Let's say we're in some kind of controlled environment where I'm not allowed to just party on the database whenever I feel like it, right?
Yeah, well, we've seen the sort of stuff you do. You just delete columns.
Party on the database!
Yeah.
yeah. So we don't want that to happen. So we're going to hand it off to our DBA who's going to do things right. Now, in the past, the poor DBA was responsible for testing the crappy upgrade scripts that we wrote that
right.
wouldn't work, and they'd have to debug it and you know spend a week figuring out whether or not it worked. Okay, now with the data tier application framework, I can just go in to Management Studio. I see here that version 1.0 of my DAC is currently deployed in my SQL Azure database. Right, just right click on that bad boy, and say upgrade. Point it to the new version of my DAC. So, paste in that path from our build. I don't think, oh yeah, that was it, right?
It's in the debug of.
Is that today? Is it 10.12?
Yep.
That sounds
right.
about right.
I'm hoping that's the right one. Yeah, it is. There's dot one. It's our deprecated column. So that's our handoff to the DBA instead of a bunch of crappy scripts that aren't going to work, right?
Right.
So the next thing that happens is the data tier application framework inspects the deployed database to detect drift. And drift is, I deployed my nice pristine DAC, it created all the schema objects behind that, and then some moron came in and created a bunch of tables and stored procedures that weren't part of my development project. Okay,
right.
That's drift. And we need to warn you if that happened so that you know that you might step on that stuff if you upgrade to this new version of the DAC, right? And if that's the case, you could reverse engineer it back into your project if you wanted to include it in
yeah.
there, right? So so there's no drift detected because we are in demo land, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you now have a choice, okay? By default, we will upgrade the database in place. We'll just go and we'll run whatever commands we need to the existing production database to make it, you know, and merge it to the new version.
Mm-hmm.
You can also select rollback, which is more side by side. We create a new database, create all the new objects in it, copy the data over, and swap the names, right? So you have two choices here. I'm going to go with in-place upgrade, which is new with SQL Server 2012.
Cool.
Previously, we only did side by side for DAC upgrade. So now the data tier application framework is going to do all the hard work of figuring out how to get from .0 to .1 of our schema.
I got a question. In this case, we just removed a column, right?
Yep.
But there could be a case where I change a data type or something like that, which would require I mean, I think a lot
within
more...
Within reason, we will figure out how to get it done. We won't do magic, however.
Sure.
We won't say, I moved this column from this table to that table.
Yeah,
right?
But at some point, there may end up having... There may be things that you still
You may need to do pre-processing or
yeah.
post-processing, and we will warn you if you're doing something that's
cool.
not kosher.
Cool.
So we're getting a warning right here. Here's the upgrade plan. Here's the 50 things my script has to do to move to the new version, and I'm getting a warning here that I've deleted my offensive column,
yep.
and that's going away forever if I proceed. I'm going to lose data,
right.
and so it's making me confirm that's indeed what I want to do. It gives me a nice summary, and then it goes and actually implements it.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's neat.
So, this is really designed to improve. Now, let me just be really clear here. There's a lot of rough edges in this. I'm showing you a nice experience that's based upon kind of a lot of the CTP and pre-release technologies we have out there now. You go out and take a run at this, you're going to find some rough edges. But this is the vision for the kind of developer experience that we
yeah.
want out there.
And so, to be clear, so right now all these tools, this is CTP, right? So this is available.
Yeah. So everything that I've showed you around backpacks and the ability to deploy those up to SQL Azure is currently pre-release.
Okay.
Cool. The only thing that's actually supported technology is DACPAC 1.0. Which is schema only,
okay.
and that shipped with the last wave of SQL Server technologies, right?
Cool.
So let's go out and see if my really ugly application is functional now against the new version of my schema. So I've got my app deployed up to the Windows Azure platform. There's my ugly app. Let's go do our Connect bike again and make sure we can...
as ugly as ever.
It is as ugly as ever, except it's ugly in a SQL Azure kind of way.
Yeah.
And, hey, we can't forget our favorite Connect bike, right?
Yeah.
So, wow, we can do inserts against SQL Azure. Is that not stunning?
It's wonderful.
But here's the really cool piece. Now when I go run my report, I have the same report. This time it's not running from an on-premise deployment of reporting services. It's hosted in a report server web service running in the Windows Azure platform,
yep, right?
You know, that is kind of end-to-end what it takes to use SQL Server developer tools to build database applications, to migrate them up to the Windows Azure platform, and to version those schemas over time.
That's great.
Very cool.
Cool. Well, thank you for showing us this.
You're more than welcome.
Fabulous.
More than welcome.
Cool. All right, I think it's that time.
I feel that tingling feeling.
Should I leave? Should I leave the room?
It's time for,
Stop the program!
Yeah, you must not watch this show. You don't know what's coming next. You should have before agreeing to come on the Cloud
Cover
Show.
Oh my God!
No. This is the moments preceding the tip of the week, which is where we give Bob our fabulous editor more leeway than he should be given.
I see.
To sort of put together sort of a nice intro. What's appropriate?
We were both in Dublin.
We were in Dublin.
Yes.
Oh, no, we're going to do one of these?
Yes,
okay.
We were in Dublin. Let's share the trip
let's
and
see,
the experience
Let's
a little
see how
bit.
Bob imagines
our trip to Dublin
our
was.
Trip to Dublin
I
was.
Detect leprechauns in our future.
I would not
Some
be surprised.
Guinness.
There was
Guinness.
Yes.
And shillelaghs. Don't
story.
Forget shillelaghs. Right. You got to have a shillelagh.
Maybe I did. We'll find out.
Only Bob knows what we did in Dublin.
All right. And with that,
here's your tip of the week.
Ernoitha, nor Lahan Erwaya, Marvaldin, Rupa Kalu, Ludes, Clonod, Achlebrin, the Beganus, Ta Grupa Heineke, Agus Binchikora, Fulton Downta, nor Lahan Orly, and Erin Agus Harlar, Eshel Toran Spriula, Taika doing an Ochtna, Kajation, Dunchation, Let Chonakon O Hermuk to Barra, Glorshach, Agus Wemhain, Erevitl.
And we're back. This tip of the week is about skipping startup tasks when you're running emulated.
Mm-hmm.
So this comes up for me sometimes when I'm doing things like running an installer in a startup task. Like I'm installing MVC3. It's worse actually when I tend to write these startup tasks that like download some big thing and then install it.
Yeah.
And on my laptop, I've already done that, and I've done it a million times. And waiting an extra 5 minutes, like, I mean, I'm downloading from my network connection and whatever, you know, and so waiting to download something and run it and whatever, doesn't make a lot of sense. I also see this come up sometimes when people are doing things where when they're running Windows Azure, they're going to install a 64-bit version of whatever, because that's what the VMs in Windows Azure are. They're 64-bit Windows machines. But they're coding on a 32-bit laptop. So it doesn't even make sense. Trying to run that installer makes no sense. And so there are frequently times where you'd like a startup task, you'd only like it to be active when you're running in Windows Azure. And so I noticed that there's a new feature in SDK 1.5, basically this environment thing.
Yeah, let's specify a variable.
Yeah, it lets you sort of push things into environment variables, and you can actually specify a lot of different things that can go into those environment variables, like the port on your input endpoint or a configuration setting value. And so lots of things that basically you can convert from things you used to have to ask the role environment about, so you had to call an API for, and you can just change that into environment variables that are just available. So, for example, from my batch file that's installing something, I get to just sort of use this thing. And so actually, there's sort of two things, because there's also, this is new, role environment.isEmulated, which is the, a lot of people built a few different ways to sort of detect whether they're emulated or not, which had to do with, like, looking at the shape of the ID of the, you know, like, does it have a parenthesis in it, and then it's, you know, it's like weird stuff like that that people did just to try to figure out
where they're running.
Now there's a good one where you can just ask, and that's also available in these environment variables.
Cool.
So you basically do this. So I wrote a little bit of XML that goes in my service definition file.
Amazing.
And it says, make an environment variable called emulated and put in it role environment emulated, right? This is the path to sort of get at that.
So it's read-write then?
It's read-write, no.
No, okay. you're just reading.
So this is, right, yeah, this is all this is doing is pulling from here and sort of stuffing it in this variable.
Yep.
So then when my startup task actually executes, just for that startup task, because it's sort of defined within that, it'll have an environment variable called emulated. So it can just do if emulated equals true, go to the end of the file.
Right.
So just sort of skip. But obviously you could put custom logic in there, whatever.
Or if PHP driver is installed, skip it.
Right.
Like there's kind of stuff.
Yeah, if you could find an easy way to define that in the XPath and then stuff it into a variable, then yes. Then in your script, you could just check that value.
Got it.
This can also, I haven't done it yet, but this can probably replace, one of the things you can put in the XPath is like local resource paths.
Yeah.
So I also do this a lot in my startup tasks. I have a little PowerShell script I always use that calls the API to find the path of the on the C drive where you can sort of save
local storage.
And then I sort of have to pass it back and parse it back out and whatever. Yep. And now I could just put a few lines of XML and make it an environment variable and it just be there already.
That's nice.
So very cool. And this, let me click this link because the XPath values, these are all the things, this is documented. So all these are the things that you can use in those environment things. So whether it's emulated, the instance ID, what update domain and fault domain you're in.
Nice.
So
that is nice.
Particularly if you're launching something else, like I was running Cassandra in a worker role, and that's a data storage technology. And it can be rack aware. So if you tell it what rack it's on, it'll make sure that it doesn't store replicas of the data on the same rack.
Mm-hmm.
Just the same way we do that stuff in our storage in SQL Azure and in blobs and tables. It has that capability too, but now it would be very easy to sort of get that fault domain without me having to write code in C# and sort of pass
just
it back.
Just pull it right out.
That's great.
So the name of the role, configuration settings, I think are a big one people will use. The local resource we just mentioned, but this is the whole list. So it's everything's documented there. You can find that whole list and see how to use it. It's a pretty cool capability, and you know, it's handy for that specific use case also. Just can I just skip this startup task when I'm running emulated?
Nice. Great.
So, yeah,
thank you for
I hope that
tip.
Helps.
Yeah, excellent. Well, if you've got any comments, thoughts, suggestions, questions, you can reach us on Twitter at CloudCoverShow. Roger, are you on the Twitters?
Yes, I'm on the Twitters, at Doherty100.
Excellent. So you can reach Roger as well?
I'm
100 years old. See all the gray?
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Okay. I believe it.
It makes sense now.
Okay.
So, excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Yeah, that was great.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Cool. We'll see you next time.